This talk is the part three of the relationship series that I've been doing. Judgment can be a large influence to how we translate energy. Personally, having grown up in a religion that was judgmental, good or bad, sin, no sin, mortal or venial sin, mistake, not mistake, error or not error, etc., can distort one's habits of translation, putting us on edge, creating unnecessary anxiety about doing things wrong. Instead of that model that I grew up with, I prefer to use my scale of effectiveness rather than a binary system of good-bad. When we understand that our awareness expands through trial and error, we can relax about the fact that we are human. We are going to make errors. That's part of the trial part, trial and error. And trial and error is the process by which we find our way. We test this. We don't want to go that way. That doesn't feel right. That didn't work. And so on. That is how we do it. The classic example in our culture is of Thomas Edison having made a tremendous number of trials and a tremendous number of errors. But he didn't see that as sin or he mean that he was going to go to hell. He just found a way that did not work. So that narrowed his field of search down to what could possibly work, and ultimately, of course, he developed the incandescent light bulb. So if we just think and realize and understand that we're supposed to make mistakes so that we can learn, if we only do things right each time, we don't know how wide the path of right is. Is it a tightrope, which so many people seem to think it is in their lives? I don't want to have a faulty thought. I don't want to say a faulty word. I don't want to do something wrong. I don't want to... And the level of anxiety that those people experience is enormous, and it translates into ill health. So if we can accept the fact that translating energy, just like any other skill, can be improved through mindful practice, you would think our educational system might want to emphasize this process. Trial and error, trial and error. But that's not really what happens. We have people so terrified of making an error, and that's how I grew up, that we constantly were in resistance, had our brakes on, interfering with our own mental, emotional, spiritual, and physical growth. Even today, I find it kind of amazing to have a conversation with a religiously dogmatic person who hasn't upgraded their views of God or people or life or the hereafter and so on since they were given those images as children in Sunday school. So the kind of information that you can give a child 6 or 8 or 10, 12 years old in Sunday school is not the end of the conversation. It is the groundwork of the conversation. And so over time, those things need to be upgraded. More concepts, more abstraction, more examples can be added to their awareness, and then they're going to function better in life instead of operating on this view of the world that they created or were handed when they were 6, 8, or 10 years old. Those people who hold on to those rigid views that they heard one time, there's nothing else to think about, are, in effect, they've stopped translating energy on this entire subject. Somehow they got the idea that what they had heard is all there is. There's nothing else to translate. No other energy is permitted into their consciousness. They can't consider any other ideas on that subject. If we translate environmental signals as threats, we will be forced into being controlled by our four driving needs of defensiveness, getting ahead of others, taking what we want without regard to other people, and holding on to our possessions, no matter what level of opposition other people display to us. Energy expression, our ways of using the energy to express our uniqueness, our talents, our passions, our values, is actually the phase of our relationships that can be the most fun. Can you accept this, that our expression of energies for the purpose of creating desirable results is one of the main aspects of the game of life? We can enjoy this activity, and we can enjoy the results. And this is what's so great about having work that you love, that you can devote your energy into the daily activities, you know, the 9 to 5s or the whatever hours to whatever hours, and however many days of the week. If you're investing that energy in creating what you want because you think the game that you're playing is so fun, so productive, so valuable, so worthwhile to yourself, your family, and other people, that's a really valuable relationship to have because it is going to be directly impacting your relationship with health, your relationship with others, your relationship with your family, your relationship with money, and on and on. If we consider the act of energy expression is actually the sowing mentioned in the law of cause and effect, we reap what we sow, that as we express energy, we're going to be reaping a harvest that is like our sowing. So if we understand that, appreciate it, we're going to go, you know what, I think I need to be more thoughtful about my expressions. What I think, what I feel, what I say, and what I do that has ramifications. Ramifications to the person who is on the delivery end instantaneously, but ramifications to me because it's going to come back as a harvest. If we're driven by our ego, and pretty much everybody is to some degree or another, then the sowing we're going to do is likely to produce an unwanted, undesirable harvest. The effects that we cause, we're not going to really like it. We don't want our ego to be in charge of causing effects, because the ego is not oriented toward balance or love or other people's self-interest. It's only thinking in the short term about what it thinks we need. And it doesn't go, there's a consequence to this behavior. It can't get, there's a consequence to that behavior. So letting the ego control our relationships is going to result in conflict. When I look at the four driving needs described in letter 5, it's obvious to me that all four are energy preservation and or energy acquisition dominant behaviors. They're about taking and keeping, hardly the most desirable characteristics to bring into normal relationships. Right now I'm spending time with my brother John and other relatives in our hometown. They are in construction, marine construction. They express their energies in work by building and improving physical structures. They build things where there were no things before. They improve things where there were things before. I guess the most exciting part of expressing energies in and through our relationships is the creativity involved. After being around people with physical skills to create, I see that they have a distinct and positive relationship with the tools and the equipment that they own and they use. I would say they have a respectful relationship with the weather, the water, with boats, barges, heavy equipment like cranes, excavators, bulldozers, motors of all sorts, materials like wood and steel and so on. It would be very difficult to be constructive if you hated or rejected the tools and the materials you needed to be constructive. Our relationship with the tools we use to express ourselves are controlling factors in how effective we are at expressing ourselves. If we want to express energy well, we need to love the means we would use to do that. So let me talk about relationships with work for a little while. Some people work a lot to get a paycheck. Some people work a lot to build things. Some people work to destroy things. All three groups of people do what they do because they believe that doing will make them feel better. Our relationship with work will be colored by our beliefs and our reliance on divine support and how much our egos will drive our behaviors. In order to free ourselves and our expressions of energy from the control of our egos, which, as I described before, are elaborated in the four driving needs described by Christ, and you can see that that's not such a good idea. So in order to be free from that, we will want to change our habitual use of negative energies to control, to disempower, or diminish other people. The use of the tools on others is sowing. So if we're going to harm somebody else by using negative tools, it's going to come back to haunt us at harvest time. If life is actually the way our ego drives tell us, then harming others to get what we want is the natural, logical way to live. But if the spiritual reality is different and is the law of cause and effect, we reap what we sow, then how we relate to others is essential to our lives, to our happiness, spiritual growth, and our success. The relationship with success is important to almost everyone. The failure rate of people trying to be successful needs to be reduced. Some misunderstandings and lack of awareness have to be the reasons for this failure. So the questions, why do so many people fail to lose weight, fail to earn enough money, fail to maintain or regain their health, fail to find meaningful work, fail to have or create loving relationships, fail to be happy? Of course, people have been asking these questions and answering them for hundreds of years in various ways. But overall, the failure rate is essentially the same, extraordinarily high. In other words, those answers haven't seemed to make any appreciable difference for most people. In the self-improvement world, this phrase is used very often, that 97% of the people are going to get no benefit out of the materials that they buy. 3% will be able to convert those materials into effective, desirable results. That's a pretty nasty failure rate. So I want to propose a few ideas that may explain the failure rate in human endeavors. 1. Most people have been tricked into believing that success is about getting. In other words, people who are committed to energy acquisition think this equals success. Bank robbers do it, embezzlers do it, Wall Streeters do it, some corporations do it. It's about taking, taking, taking. Not so. The second point is most people are driven by their need to defend themselves from criticism, emotional and physical attack. So this is an energy preservation posture. It's stressful, not creative, it's reactive. And you can hear or feel that somebody in that state is liable to be putting their brakes on for fear of what's going to happen if they start to move their energy forward. Third point. Too many people believe that when they first try to do something and they don't do well, it means they lack some magical ingredient. So, what's the point? They stop trying. They didn't learn that doing well is the result of persistent effort combined with learning from that effort and making adjustments to their efforts. They felt as though, well, I don't have that talent. That magical ingredient is missing from me. Environmentally or family-wise or genetically, so they give up. The fourth point is people don't realize that they draw life energy and inspiration from the divine and the supply is unlimited. So instead of mindfully and eagerly accessing divine support for our growth, nutrition and nourishment, healing, protection, fulfillment of need, work, survival, we run into the arms of all sorts of people who market God alternatives. Awareness alternatives, and worse. If you buy this, if you need one, you got to have more of these in your garage or in your medicine cabinet, or this is, and we fall into that trap. Fifth point, people don't understand rhythm or the law of cause and effect, so they get impatient with time. Things are not happening at the rate I want. Things are not happening at the rate I want. And worse, superstitious. I don't know how things happen, just bad luck, I guess, or fate, or I don't know how things happen. Things happen because they are caused. Cause and effect, cause and effect. There's no cause that doesn't have an effect. There's no effect that hasn't had a cause. Sixth point. Christians pray to Jesus to heal them, make them wealthy, make them happy. The lack of understanding of consciousness retards their individual efforts to sow and reap effectively. I'm going to sit here on my butt and pray. Oh, it didn't work. Jesus, come and die for my sins. Correct my errors. Correct my inertia. Do something for me. Make me win the lottery ticket. Yeah. Not so. It's consciousness. Seventh point. If we knew that the energies we express in all our relationships with success, health, people, etc., are actually the divine energy that we drew in and translated according to our unique level of consciousness, we would appreciate that giving energy is the secret to success. I can draw it in, I translate it based upon my uniqueness, my talents, my passion, my interests, and I deliver it to other people for their benefit. I draw more in, and I'm going to experience trial and error in that because that's human activity, that defines human activity. And if we can keep adjusting, become better at adjusting, we're going to be more successful. There's no farmer that's surprised when the energy that he has invested in his fields results in a harvest. He sees cause and effect very clearly. He's not scratching his head in the fall going, gee, I wonder where all this stuff came from. Wonder where this came from. The rest of us, not quite so perceptive as a farmer because he is intimately connected to this cause and effect. The preparation of the soil, the planting of the seeds, the weeding, the fertilizing, the watering. He understands all of that stuff and he recognizes the weather has something to do with it. And the harvest is a symptom of all that foregoing energy exchange. The harvest is the effect of all the other causes that he has invested in. Eighth point, I believe this to be true. People mistakenly focus on success, but they would be better off focusing on succeeding. Success feels like a single endpoint, a destination. I'll be happy as soon as I get to point X. Yeah. I think the pull of that success may start out being strong, but over time it's not going to be strong enough to keep that person's attention. But over time, that pull of success is not going to be strong enough to keep that person's attention and intention aligned. And they quit, turn around, go back, go off in a different direction. Succeeding, however, is the process, the journey, the path to success. And being able to generate good feelings in doing necessary activities, whether you're the farmer that's preparing the ground, there's no harvest in preparing the ground, but it is part of succeeding. So he succeeds when he prepares the ground. He even succeeds earlier in the season when he prepares his equipment. And he goes on and on. That preparation, being able to generate good feelings and doing necessary activities, will keep us empowered. Empowered enough to be persistent when it gets a little bumpy, the road gets a little difficult. It's powerful enough to keep us safe enough to try more, and relaxed enough to be able to be aware that now, in a relaxed state, we're better thinkers, we make better decisions, the things that we do are likely to be more effective. So in our trials, the errors start to get minimized because we're more effective and we're more present to what we're doing. If our energy expressions are mainly devoted to satisfying our four driving needs and the need to be right and the need to look good or get approval, it is certain that we will be expressing negative characteristics. These negative characteristics are defined in Christ's returns, but they're criticism, sarcasm, judgmentalism, rejection, enmity, intolerance, hatred, jealousy, aggression, violent impulses, thieving, falsehoods, double and devious dealings, and slander. And these things are harmful to the growth, nurturing, healing, protection, fulfillment of need, work, survival of others. And at the same time, our expressions of those negatives are harming us by setting in motion the inevitable law of cause and effect. We are sowing these negative energies, and we will harvest these negative energies in the future. If you said to a farmer that you wanted to plant those 7, 8, or 9 different things in the consciousness the soil of consciousness, and what would he think would be the harvest? There would be no doubt in that farmer's mind that you don't want to have that harvest. And the way not to have that harvest is don't sow those seeds. I believe this to be true. All disapproval is self-disapproval, directed or displaced onto someone else. We project our bad feelings about ourselves onto others. We, with our turbulent feelings about ourselves, are kind of like a thunderstorm, throwing the pain inside of us at lightning rods. Who's a lightning rod? People standing around us, spouses, children, co-workers, employees, employers, customers, strangers. And it is sowing seeds of our own future harm. What can we do? What can we do? We can understand and imply that the next phase of the energy model of life, energy release, letting go of what no longer serves us, is essential to our health and happiness. It's essential on a physical level, and it's essential on the spiritual, mental, and emotional levels, too. Anybody who's ever had a stomachache because they haven't gone to the bathroom in a while, they are constipated, as like, or a stomachache because they've got some sort of food poisoning, knows that energy release is a solution to the problem. Holding on to bad feelings about ourselves is harmful. Regret and guilt are normal experiences of error in the trial error world, but they're designed for the purposes of teaching points. Oh, that didn't feel good. Oh, I wish I didn't do that. Oh, I'm not going to do that again. Boom. Get the education and release the emotional pain. You don't have to carry that around. Oh, I did something bad when I was 5 years old, so here I am, 115 years old, still toting around that same guilt, same regret, same bad feelings about me. Not necessary. Not part of the design. But the ego, said, hold on to that stuff. Hold on to that stuff. Because otherwise you might forget it and do something bad in the future. Hold on to that stuff. There is no value in continuing to beat ourselves up because, as we do so, we're sowing more seeds of guilt and regret. If you sow seeds of guilt and regret, guess what the harvest is? Oh yeah, that's kind of obvious, isn't it? I grew up as a Catholic. And it seems to me that the act of confession in Catholicism is an example of expressing energy and releasing it to arrive at closure, the final phase in this energy model of life. Releasing the negative characteristics that I mentioned earlier, sarcasm, judgment, criticism, and so on, to divine consciousness for healing is also a necessary step to cleansing our own consciousness. In Christ Returns Reveals Startling Truth, Christ makes the statement that in order to advance our consciousness spiritually, we need remorse, remorse, remorse. When I think about remorse in the law of cause and effect, and I'm trying to get my mind around remorse, I think that remorse is our willingness to experience the pain we have caused another person or animal or thing. By accepting that pain, we are accepting the harvest of the seeds we have sown. And somehow, that seems to complete the cycle that is guaranteed in the law of cause and effect. But most of us try to avoid the negative effects we've caused. I think this is pretty much a normal human consciousness behavior, right? Defend ourselves from criticism or emotional and physical attack and want to arrive first in the race of life. It's like, no, I'm pretty much perfect. I'm pretty much perfect. Meanwhile, the ego, after it says that, is beating us for our own imperfection and scolding us and terrorizing us. But I think a higher spiritual consciousness realizes the effects we have caused cannot be avoided. They are our due. And the sooner we embrace them and accept them through remorse, the sooner we will cleanse our consciousness and be free to advance spiritually. I really like the idea that we need to learn by trial and error. That is a completely different value than the one that I grew up with. I thought an error meant that a person didn't have that particular talent and should avoid further activities related to that error in that particular field. I didn't know, I didn't understand that success was an outcome of effective trial and error and persistence and adjustment based upon those efforts, and that would advance us. To falsely believe that success equaled the avoidance of error results in a timid, emotionally delicate person. Oh, I might do it wrong. Not much gets accomplished by that person. If we can adopt this compassionate understanding of the nature of human energy acquisition, preservation, translation, expression, that trial and error is a reality, I think we can become more effective so much more quickly. We will release the need to self-castigate, and we can move into closure, closure being the final phase, final step in the energy model of life. When we feel satisfied with our efforts, knowing that we did our best in our energy exchange experiences, we've learned well, we would have been succeeding. Closure allows for the healing of any hurts we caused or experienced. We can use remorse, right, to feel what others felt, thereby satisfying the law of cause and effect. We can feel regret and guilt, and thereby learn the unacceptability of various approaches, various techniques or strategies in our thinking, feeling, speaking, and acting. In closure, we become more confident that we are on the path of succeeding. With this sense, now we're going to be more empowered for the next energy exchange experience. Our balanced state is actually going to make us more effective because we're not going, uh-oh, so delicate, afraid that the next straw is going to break the camel's back. In fact, our lives become much more fun, much more exciting. So I want to apply the principle of the energy model of life to what I saw in the relationships of my brother John with his clients the other day when I accompanied him on some calls. So I met his clients and I met some friends in Montauk on the far eastern end of Long Island. In the business relationships, both John and the clients were interested in energy acquisition. They want to have John look at their problem locations in their marinas, tell them what they needed to have done, how much it would cost, and more important, how soon he could do the work. John needed to look at the sites, determine the problems, and explain the process to correct the problems. The principle of energy protection was more important to the clients than to John. Although he was protective of his time and his scheduling, he wouldn't commit to time frames because of his backlog of work. But the clients looked at their situations at these two really large marinas. They were concerned about the problems with their boat lift ramps, and the dangers of accidents and damage due to the weakened pilings really worried them, because in a few months they will start launching boats back into the water after the winter, in very early spring, and maybe even before spring, and to have something go wrong with this capability in a marina would be devastating, devastating from a financial standpoint. They couldn't earn the money that they need in order to sustain themselves, but devastating if something happened to a crane or a crane operator and or a boat. The liability would be enormous. So energy protection was certainly alive and well from their point of view. The principle of energy translation is a problem for John because there's so much energy that was coming at him, so much information about these really complicated jobs. I've worked with him years ago in smaller capacities, and I wasn't really prepared for the complexity of the problems that he was going to encounter when we went out on these calls. So he has to take in the information that he perceived, but he was doing some measurements, and he's looking at it, and he's talking to them, and he's testing various things related to the sites. And then he has to translate it into a description of that work. He has to translate it into a quote, which involves him determining all the different equipment, all the different materials, all the different manpower that would be required for it, and the length of time would be needed in order to satisfy that. He'd have to determine the need for permits, because out here everything is environmentally sensitive, so the permit time is a huge challenge for people in his industry, because it touches upon water and the seashore, which in Long Island is a major asset to this entire area. And so you look at all of this, and then he has to determine the cost of all that material and the price that he needs to charge to the clients, along with a start date. So all of that information has to be translated based upon 15 or 20 or 30 minutes on a site, in a conversation, observing this thing, taking a few photographs. So at the end of one of these conversations, when we got back into the truck and before we went to the next site for a client contact, I asked John, how long is it going to take you to create the quote? And he answered, about 2 to 3 weeks. I thought, whoa. That information is never going to be fresher than it is right then. And I saw a need to do the translation right there. And if there was some missing information, go acquire it again before we drove away. Acquire whatever you need, require, you know, measure more, you know, stamp on the ground, do whatever you needed to do in order to get all the energy you needed to do an effective translation. One of the other problems that I've personally experienced is the difficulty in translating energy when it comes time to explain to crew members what has to be done and how it needs to be done. As I mentioned, these jobs that we were looking at, to me, were way past any level of jobs that I personally had experienced previously in marine construction. So the complexity was enormous. Only somebody with John's experience of, 35 or 40 years, and he's got an engineer's mentality too, would be able to grasp the problem and what needed to be done. And cheap ways to do it, the right ways to do it, the wasteful ways to do it, and so on. But explaining that stuff to a crew member on how to implement the ideas that needed to be done, right? This is what needs to be done. In marine construction, people that can build are not necessarily effective communicators. And I have found that to be the case, and my brothers have both confessed to that, my brother George and my brother John, and they're not that effective at communicating it. These are the guys that would do it, get out of the way, let me do it, as compared to let me explain how you should do it so the crew member could effectively translate that incoming description of do it this way, be careful of that, this might happen, and if it does, do adjust this way. So if a crew member can't really understand what they're supposed to do because they can't translate the incoming communication and instructions, mistakes happen, jobs take longer, the bosses and the workers have bad feelings about themselves and each other, and the worst possible thing that John is does everything he possibly can to avoid is that he wants to make sure that nobody ever gets hurt on the job. But communication, effective communication, can minimize the time lost and other problems that can arise. So the principle of energy expression shows up in the communication with the office staff, right? People doing the billing, doing some of the admin stuff, preparing the quotes and so on. The communication with the clients by way of the quote, ordering materials for the job that have to be delivered to the site, and now you're dealing with a bunch of different vendors. And the movement of equipment and personnel to the job site by barge or by truck or both. And at some point, the most important expression is the crew members doing the job, expressing their knowledge, their strength, their energy, their toughness, doing this very strenuous work, oftentimes in difficult weather. And that's how these ideas become physically manifested. We were there on a beautiful day, but you could feel the wind blowing in September on Montauk, in the edge of the Atlantic Ocean, like it's already starting to get cold. that place in December, January, February, March, that cold is bitter. And you've got to be one tough person to be able to do that work. I didn't see energy release implemented as a principle in this because it had already occurred at the finished job that we saw. All the debris, extra equipment, so on, had already been removed by the contractor that John had hired. So the job was complete. The only thing he had to do is now go pick up a final check from the owner of that property. But as he inspected the work on that dock, he said he particularly liked the feelings that come with a job well done and completed. And that is the principle of closure. Feelings of satisfaction at having done well, having learned a lot, having empowered the people needed to do that, having been empowered by those feelings of that job well done, so a person can now be ready for the next energy exchange experiences with clients, the quotes, the staff, the vendors, the crew, the equipment, the contractors, etc. Now, I'm applying these principles to this work environment, but I believe that they are applicable pretty much to any project that you or I would be interested in starting and completing, starting, succeeding at, and completing. I would like to end the service with a prayer. This is the pluralized version of the prayer from Letter 8 in Christ Returns, Reveal Startling Truth. Father, Mother, Life, you are our life, our constant support, our health, our protection, our perfect fulfillment of every need, and our highest inspiration. We ask you to reveal the true reality of yourself to us. We know it is your will that we shall be fully illumined, that we may better receive awareness of your presence within and around us. We believe and know that this is possible. We believe that you protect and maintain us within perfect love. We know that our eventual purpose is to express you. As we speak to you, we know you are perfectly receptive of us, for you are universal loving intelligence which has so marvelously designed this world and brought it into visible form. We know that as we ask you to speak to us, we are sending out a consciousness searchlight into your divine consciousness, and as we listen, you will be penetrating our human consciousness and coming ever closer to our increasingly receptive minds and hearts. We commit ourselves and our lives into your care. Thank you. It is so. Amen.